Good morning and welcome to Connections on MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Bill Newell, Josh Arnold, and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. We bring you this North Shore magazine-type program on Tuesdays and Thursdays and sometimes on Fridays. And it'll be Friday again this week, pretty sure, as we have a lot of interviews lined up to get out as much information as we can about all kinds of stuff, primarily news, of course, but we'll be talking on sports and entertainment as well. I want to bring in Josh Arnold now this morning. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning. Hope everybody is well and recovering from quarantine and doing well.
Well, I don't know about recovering from the quarantine because still trying to figure out.
We're still in it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, this morning I was going over in my own mind pluses and minuses, and I have a scale from 1 to 10 on the plus side and a scale from 1 to 10 on the negative side. And I was putting my concerns and anxieties in there on the negative side. And then I was putting in my my okayness on the positive side. And I ended up right at 0. And 0 is not a bad place to be on this scale. So how are you doing?
Doing all right. I scan the news publications looking for good stories. Not all of them are Massachusetts, but one that struck me was came out of California Highway Patrol. They said since the stay-at-home order, they've had an 87% increase in issuing tickets on the freeway for people driving 100 miles an hour or greater.
Oh, jeez, is that right?
That didn't occur to me that that would happen, but that was, I found that very interesting.
Well, some people have a death wish one way or the other, I guess. That's really bizarre. What else catches your eye locally, Josh, on the North Shore?
Well, I saw the a thing about the Red Sox hopefully getting back into play. Of course, there's been lots of chitter-chatter about the upcoming NFL draft and people feeling let down that Brady and Gronkowski left and all of that, but that's occupying a lot of talk. I find that there's a lot of people finding time to connect with others in different ways, and the posting scenarios or what is your dream lineup for the best Celtics team, the best Patriots, all those kinds of machinations and people responding and it's a lot of good, just goodwill out there in terms of people trying to help each other during this shutdown time.
And one thing I find interesting on the national scale, we can talk about this later on when Bill joins us probably in about half an hour from now. I find it interesting that Donald Trump, in my opinion, is the master of media. They talk about the other guy there, the king of all media, whatever his name is. But Donald Trump is the master of media. And I find it interesting that, you know, this is a campaign season. This is a presidential election year. And the fact that the Democrats aren't putting anything out there. Not that I would imply that it has to be negative or opposed, but they're not putting anything out there. And Joe Biden, I mean, it's like he's disappeared. And I find that kind of curious.
Well, yeah, but I think that there's a saturation point with any communication, and I think that they've long since passed that. I think people are growing weary of the every night conference. On any given night, he doesn't fare that well with the questions. It's like this cat and mouse game of the press saying, who's going to throw the best tomato tonight to get him off script to say something? And
well,
I don't know that that's...
I found that very juvenile between the press and the president on both sides. It's sort of like, I know you are, but what am I? But what I was referring to, and maybe you could think about this and we can get back to it later, was just the fact that in terms of a presidential campaign, it would seem that there's an opportunity here for the Democrats to step in, to get their message out, maybe have some kind of a plan. You know, should they take take over in November, guess what? This stuff is still going to be around, and the effects of this stuff is going to be around. So far, crickets.
Yeah, and the thing is that Joe Biden, I'm on the distribution list, so I get all the posts that say Joe's having a live forum, and you can watch it at such and such. I get them for other people, too. But it's not the same thing as being able to command time by virtue of your office. So I think I'm going to tell you that I don't know this to be a fact, but I'll bet Mario Cuomo's midday conferences are getting better ratings than Joe Biden's news talks when he's having a rally or whether a virtual forum and so forth. And that's an issue that they're going to have to deal with.
Absolutely. All right, Josh, we got to get moving to our next guest here, Josh. So let me get back to you. Hold on to that thought, and we'll talk a little bit more about it later on. Okay?
Very well.
All right, thanks, Josh. We'll be back. All right, let me mention today's guests here. We sort of got a little sidetracked. I apologize for that. We got a big show coming up here as we've got a lot of information to dispense. Manchester by the Sea's town administrator, Greg Federspiel, will be our first guest coming up momentarily here. And that will be followed by Bill Newell talking with State Representative Lenny Mira. We'll also check in. Oops, sorry about that. I need my man here. We'll also check in with Salem City Councilor at Large Conrad Prosnewski. Josh, Bill, and I will be back for a little bit of a roundtable, and we'll also be talking with Steve Krause, writer-at-large for the Daily Item at Lynn. So please stay with us. First interview coming right up.
Manchester by the Sea, town administrator Greg Federspiel is with us. And Greg, welcome. Good to see you again. It's been a while, but thanks for joining us.
Happy to join you, and good to see you again.
Manchester by the Sea, you had a selectmen's meeting this week. I know part of the agenda centered on the COVID-19 update. So what is the update from Manchester by the Sea for the coronavirus?
So relatively speaking, we're doing okay. We continue to stress, obviously, the physical distancing and all the good hygiene that people are supposed to be doing and staying at home for the most part. And we're having some good results with that. We have a fairly small number of infections in town. We've crept up to 12, but we were going there for 2 weeks without any new infections. So we were pleased to see that. So much better than some other communities that have seen a lot higher exponential growth. But we're lucky to be in a community where people can segregate and still maintain a decent livelihood.
Other than the spacing, other communities have spacing too, but that number seems very, very good. Do your health officials give you any reason why that might be more likely to have those low numbers where you are?
Right. So again, I think it's partly our demographics. So we are a community of commuters who are no longer commuting. I would say most people are able to work from home and hunker down without having to go out as much. So I think demographically who we have for a population, I think works in our favor in this case.
Yeah, no, that's obviously that's the good point, I guess. It's, you know, I also, when I think of Manchester by the Sea, Greg, I'm also thinking of the coastline, the fact that you have a harbor there with some commercial fishermen and so on, but that hasn't Correct. Really started yet, has it? Or am I off? Or do you have a few fishermen working now?
So a few are anxious to get underway, and we're working to accommodate them. So they will be operating out of the commercial pier. The marinas are struggling. They are not operating right now. Obviously, this is their busiest time of year, trying to get boats ready and into the water. So clearly, the boating season is going to be delayed. And I think one of our struggles just as a town is what to do about the beaches. So right now they are closed, parking lot and the beach itself. People are anxious to, you know, as the weather gets warmer, they want to be able to take a walk and get a little fresh air, particularly when you're feeling a little cooped up. So we struggle with that, but so far we have, Selectmen and Board of Health have said, look, we need to just bear down and forego that pleasure of walking the beach until we get past the surge here.
And that makes sense. That's what a lot of other cities and towns are doing right now. The waterfront clearly is restricted and so on. Do you see a way of kind of opening that up at some point down the road? I mean, I'm sure down the road, but is there a plan in place to do that?
So we actually just met this morning with some of the department heads to talk about how we might gradually ease the restrictions. We're anxiously waiting to see what the governor does in terms of the May 4th deadline and whether or not the full restrictions will remain in place. If there's some loosening of the statewide restrictions, I think we'll take a look at how we can slowly open up some of our parks and waterfront areas.
You mentioned a minute ago the budget is front and center in your community, the selectmen and other committees working on their budgets. But there seems right now to be so much up in the air with unknown revenue coming into cities and towns, and then and accelerated expenses as well.
Yeah, so you know, we finished our proposed budget a couple of days before the COVID crisis really hit. So we are working now on what we're calling our Plan B budget. We've had to delay town meeting. We're hoping to get town meeting in by the end of June, and working now on a budget that would have no tax increases. So we're looking under every rock to see where we can find some savings as we put together this revised budget for the new year.
What is the update then on town elections and also town meeting for Manchester by the Sea?
Yeah, so for the town meeting, we are targeting June 22nd as our new date for town meeting, and elections to be June 30th, the last day.
Now, do you have certain restrictions for the town meeting as far as number of people, or is it still kind of too far out to really nail that down at this point? Still almost 2 months away.
Right. So, we have a traditional open town meeting and, normally with 300 to 400 people attending, which is a good turnout for a town of our size. So right now we're hoping that that's how we can proceed. We'll have to see as it gets closer, whether or not we'll have to do some, every third seat is occupied or just what. We'll have to figure that out as we get closer.
Well, I know Rick Moore has joined us here on the line as well here on the from our connection show a little late in joining us, but he's here now, nonetheless. Rick?
Well, I got in a little late, and I was wondering, Greg, how is the communication in town in terms of you're talking with your staff or other people or having meetings online? How is that going? Because I know some people have said that, it doesn't allow for great participation. Other people says it does.
Well, interesting. I'm in the camp that it actually has allowed more participation. We have seen a market increase in the number of people logging in or dialing in to our virtual meetings. We would have 5 to maybe 10 people at a selectman's meeting. We're getting 50 plus people dialing in or logging in. So I think we're going to see a demand for the ability to participate in our meetings remotely, even when this is all over.
Is that more work for you to do this?
It's a little bit more work. It's obviously a little more cumbersome, but you get used to it as you do it more and more. Mm-hmm. And it's a little harder to recognize people when they have a question, that sort of thing. We have people who are dialing in as well as logging in. People who log in, we can easily identify. They can, raise their hand or put a chat comment in. But the people who are dialed in don't have that option. So it's a little harder to get them recognized. But we're doing okay with it.
I have to learn the protocol because I wasn't sure how to break in and ask the question. So you said raise your hand, so I got that. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
Just for our listeners, we are Zooming here. So our website, Greg, we've just kind of embraced this new Zoom technology, although be it not new technology, we get it. But we're finding it's helped out on a number of different things for conferencing and talking with people. And people like yourself, Greg, use it quite a bit and very familiar with it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm spending you know, most of my days doing this, you know, working with staff, working with constituents, working with boards.
I do have a question. We talked with Chief Fitzgerald last week or the week before, and he and also the Essex Police Chief, Paul Francis, have changed their staffing and how they do their hours and so on. Is there anything like that elsewhere in the town where that kind of modification has had to be made?
So we did a similar approach with DPW. We divided the DPW crew into two teams, and just like we did with the police. So 1 week, one team is on and the other team is off, and then the next week they flip, they swap. It's enabled us to keep a full complement, obviously modified, but nonetheless, keeping everyone healthy. I'm very pleased that all staff have remained healthy. We did have a case in our fire department. We also run our ambulance. So we did have an infection in one of our firefighter EMTs, and a couple of others had to be quarantined, but we've gotten through that, and we're at full complement. So that's been one of my biggest worries, is just keeping staff healthy to make sure public safety is operating. But so far, so good.
Let me ask you about regionalization. Always an interesting topic to talk to leaders from North Shore communities, but in light of what's been happening, have you been doing more regional conferencing with leaders from neighboring cities and towns?
Yes, we have been doing more. I would say we reach out to each other pretty regularly, as it, you know, even prior to COVID, but certainly since COVID, there have been numerous calls, conference calls during the week, each week. We're dialing in to listen to the lieutenant governor. There's a North Shore mayor's group, a manager's group that is getting together. There's a smaller, more localized group of us who are sharing advice and troubleshooting areas together. There's quite a bit of information sharing going on.
I know Rick has asked this question about the being a little bit housebound to some of our other guests and the cabin fever kind of a piece. Are you sensing that at all up in Manchester by the Sea? Any of that piece at all, or in Rick's case, down at Manchester by the Sea? Yeah.
Right. Yes. I think people are trying to be patient, but it's challenging. With the announcement that schools are going to not open for the rest of this year, that was a bit of a blow, I think, to people. Yeah. They were holding out hope that the kids could go back to school. And so it is hard. Again, we live in an area where we have some beautiful land to roam in and get outside. So that helps. But it's still a challenge.
Yeah. What's the sense in it? I don't know if you asked this because I'm late to the party, but what's the sense in the business community? Because, Manchester by the Sea, like Salem and like Gloucester, you have a lot of restaurants, a lot of people who come there to dine out.
Yeah, I'm very worried for them. I know that they are very worried themselves. We have small mom and pop type operations in town, they are really hurting right now. We're looking into some ways that the town might be able to help. We're just in the early stages of exploring that. Both the finance committee and selectmen really indicated that as a priority to look into some avenues for us to offer some support. We don't want to see all of our shops go dark.
Let me ask you one last question, Greg, and that would be, you mentioned the schools, and with the governor's announcement this week that schools closed for the rest of the year. What does that mean? What did that trigger within the school department? Is it, obviously no one is totally surprised at that announcement, but yet on the other hand, it does kind of, it's like putting the nail into the school year, so to speak. It does finalize things and makes things very clear what's ahead. And I don't know how that impacts the town.
Yeah, it's it has a couple of effects, obviously. For the teachers and the kids to not be able to connect before the summer break, that's a real disappointment. Certainly for our seniors, seniors in high school, it's a very different ending than what they were anticipating. So that's hard. That's something that that kids look forward to, you know, that graduating parties and graduation itself. It's going to be hard to forego that. But, you know, the teachers are great. They're plugging away. They're providing good content for the students over the internet and online.
Well, Greg, we want to thank you for taking some time to join us. You know, that's obviously you started off with some very good news about the coronavirus and the actual town of Manchester by the Sea. And let's hope that continues. So, Greg, stay safe. Thank you for your time. And again, you know, a special thanks for you taking some time to join us today.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. Be well and keep spreading the good word of what we're all trying to do.
You got it. Greg Federspiel, the town administrator, Manchester by the Sea, with us here today on Connections.
This is Connections on MSONewsSports.com.
State Representative Lenny Mira is with us from up north in northern part of Essex County. With his district includes Newbury, West Newbury, Merrimack, Groveland, Georgetown, Boxford, and so on. But Representative, thanks for joining us, and thanks for checking in with us. We appreciate you taking some time.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me on, Bill.
Well, the question, I guess, is what's happening right now at the State House this week in regards to the response to the coronavirus?
Yeah, working on a number of bills. The calls that we get the most of right now are on unemployment claims. And as you can imagine, there was a surge of claims as tens of thousands of people were laid off at the same time. And so we are finally able to manage the workers that would typically receive benefits. But now we've expanded unemployment benefits to people who typically would not qualify. It's through PUA, Pandemic Unemployment Assistance. And that's going to cover people that normally would not be covered. People like self-employed individuals, gig workers, freelancers, independent contractors. So the website is now open. Mass.gov, and you can apply for those benefits. Keep in mind, this is brand new. We've never done this before, never covered people like that because they weren't paying into the system, but now we are going to cover them. But it required an entirely new computer platform to do that. So you can get information on that and a whole bunch of other COVID-19 information at our website, mass.gov.
Representative, I guess it's no surprise that they had issues with just staffing because of the incredible increase in volume when this all broke a couple of weeks ago. So, but I understand those kinds of issues are pretty much resolved as well because they've staffed it up as required.
Yeah, for the most part, but still there is a huge surge of applicants applying for these benefits. Also, keep in mind there are other benefits being applied for at the same time. At the federal level, we just got word late last night that the Senate approved another round of small business financing, the PPP, Paycheck Protection Program. Just so people, because we got a lot of calls on this as well. A lot of small businesses try to apply for these benefits, especially the forgivable loans. If you get a loan from the SBA, Small Business Administration, it's forgivable if it's used for payroll expenses and certain overhead expenses as well. That money ran out really quickly, and a lot of it depended on your relationship with your bank and their relationship with SBA. And so the Senate did approve, the U.S. Senate approved some more funding last night. We have some visual aids. I don't know if you can see this or not. But it's another round of funding, and it's going to be over $300 billion in total loans, $60 billion for small lenders. And here's something else you can ask for, Bill. It's going to include about $75 billion for hospitals because they're getting inundated as well. Keep in mind, hospitals usually make money on elective surgeries and things of that nature. And that is not being done at this time. They're being inundated with people with pandemic illnesses. And that, of course, is quite often done at a loss. So our hospitals are struggling. They had to hire more health workers. And so there was some funding in that bill last night to help alleviate that. Finally, I also see a number here, $50 billion for testing, because that's something else that we didn't have enough of, Bill. The states notified the feds that we desperately need more funding. And so this $50 billion is going to go toward the creation and administering of tests so that we can get a better handle on this pandemic. That would be very helpful, not only to get people safely in the hospitals when they need it, but also it's going to be helpful when we eventually try to open up the economy again, which we're hoping will happen soon.
I want to follow up with you on that hospital piece because, and again, it's a bill that just passed, so I don't expect you to be on top of every issue here regarding that piece, but the money going to hospitals, as you point out, that the elective surgery was postponed, so they're not doing that. So even though they're getting crushed in certain areas of the hospital, other areas may not be so busy, and they're losing that revenue that was a steady stream of revenue that the business plan was built on for the hospitals. So what does this money cover, do you know, that does go or is targeted for the hospitals?
Yeah, this money is from the feds, and so it's to cover their costs on treating patients that are ill due to the pandemic. I think they're trying to make it so that anyone who does become ill, you know, has their costs covered one way or the other, whether they're on commercial insurance or whatever. We want to make sure people are able to get tested, and no one refrains from getting tested because of cost considerations. We want to make sure they get treated, make sure they can get tested, because that benefits us all. But that's at the federal level. At the local level, we were working on some bills that would help protect healthcare workers from any kind of liability, things of that nature. And these are things that Beacon Hill's working on. Beacon Hill's not meeting right now. We're not going to the State House. We just have a tiny number of people there that are working on these bills. We try to give them some sort of a committee hearing and then try to get them voted on in as safely a manner as possible. But these are all going on in the background, and, you know, we are working together. It's kind of ironic, I guess, that it took something as horrible as a pandemic to get people in the state and federal governments to finally work together in a bipartisan fashion to work towards a common goal, because it's all hands on deck right now. You know, we're all on the same team. We have a common enemy here in this virus, and we really do need to pull together on this, and we are starting to do that, happy to say.
Do you have any particular news going back up to your district, any particular news or news notes from your district to share with our listeners? I imagine all the towns are kind of dealing with the same issues in a similar way and so on. But anything unique standing out within your district?
Oh, yeah. Bunch of little things. We started by just contacting first responders and other workers with regards to safety equipment. My concern was masks and gloves for people in our fire department or our police department. If they have to respond to a call, they don't know who's infected. We don't know who's not infected. So we wanted to make sure they were equipped, and so far they are. We're doing pretty well on that at this time. The other thing that's going on right now, I'm getting a lot of calls from our town halls regarding real estate taxes. So some cities and towns are electing to push back the deadline date for the payment of real estate tax, because a lot of people are simply unable to make those payments at this time. Unfortunately, by doing that, the banks that collect escrow payments for real estate taxes, they want to be able to delay their payments. Well, that's going to be a huge hit on our cities and towns. Their budgets are constrained to begin with, and this pandemic has really hit revenues particularly hard. And so, you know, we got to find a way to make sure that the banks who already have this money, by the way, are making the payments. And we want to, at the same time, provide some relief for individual homeowners who perhaps are unable to make a payment at this time.
What about with the small businesses in your district as well? What are you hearing from them? You might have kind of touched on some of this information earlier when we were talking about the SBA loans, but what are you hearing from small business people?
Yeah, depending on the type of business, you know, it's a different situation for just about everyone. But the one I hear the most of, I guess, is from restaurants. They're getting particularly hit hard. You know, they can do takeout, they can do deliveries, but it's not the same. They just don't make, you know, that much money, you know, selling a sandwich. It's, you know, they need to be able to open their bars and restaurants. We did allow them to now start selling alcohol if it's sold in a sealed container, its original container. But even then, it's not the same. And so what they're telling me, Bill, is that, you know, they can go a few weeks like this, but if they go a few months, a lot of them aren't going to make it. They're just not going to be able to stay in business because they still have these overhead costs with loans, utilities, insurance, et cetera. So I'm very concerned about businesses like that. I also got friends that own a bus line. You know, they do charter buses and movie theaters, and they're shut down completely. They have zero money coming in, but at the same time, they still have a lot of their expenses. And school bus companies are in that, boat as well, because those school buses are parked and school districts are wrestling with the to continue to pay school bus companies when they're not delivering students. It's a difficult question. If you don't pay them, they have to let their drivers go. If they let their drivers go, they're going to have a hard time hiring new ones because it was difficult to get CDL drivers in the first place. So these are all moving pieces that we're dealing with at this time, and we're going to have to wrestle with them somehow, some way.
Yeah, wow. You're right. And there's when you get into this, Lenny, as you're finding out and I've known for a while, there's all these layers that have to that have to be dealt with, and it, as long as it goes on, basically the worse and worse it gets.
Oh, absolutely, with no question. You know, we had a Zoom meeting last night with the city of Haverhill and the mayor and the city council, and we went through all of these things. You know, do we pay the bus company? Do we keep on essential workers? Well, who are those essential workers? And as the mayor, Jim Fiorentini, said, there's a lot of people in City Hall that do crucial work that we rely on every day. We can't just board up City Hall and stop paying, because people rely on these services every single day. You know, they have to collect, excise taxes. They have to collect real estate taxes. Bills have to get paid. You know, we have pension payments that cities and towns have to make every month or every quarter. Those have to be made, or there will be dire consequences. And we're starting to run out of funds. And so now you're starting to see governors plead with the feds on getting help just to keep state and municipal government afloat, because there are payments that we simply have to be made. We cannot, avoid those. We can't allow these things to go unpaid. And so we got some difficult choices to make. The feds are moving. You know, sometimes things happen slowly. This is government, but there are certain things that we're trying to make clear are absolutely crucial. And the good news is the lines of communication are open, and we are working together towards that. So we just got to come up with a definition of what is essential, what is crucial at this time, and then come up with a plan to take care of it. But we are doing it.
Let me ask you one last question, Lenny, and that would be this. I mean, you mentioned the ability of towns and cities to pay their bills right now, but this would now be the budget planning process for both the state and the localities, the cities and towns, and that really can't happen right now too well because of all the uncertainty and all the crush that's going to be happening economically. And so there's the state, there's the federal, state, and local cities and towns, this whole ripple effect and interconnectivity. And at the State House, you'd be right now right in the heat of budget planning for the upcoming fiscal year.
Yeah, that's exactly right. A couple of months ago, we were meeting with Ways and Means to talk about necessities in our district. You know, we were looking for earmarks for things like, you know, handicap ramps or protecting our water supplies and weed control in our lakes and ponds. And that's all going to go by the wayside. We basically took that preliminary budget, tore it into a million pieces. We have to start all over, Bill. And so I think what we're going to do now at both the state and municipal level is we're going to start using, mini budgets, like perhaps a 1/12th budget, so that it is done in stages, in chunks, because we can't foresee what the total shortfall will be. The estimates are anywhere from $4 to $6 billion in lost revenue for the coming budget, but we still don't know what that number is. So we will just do this perhaps on a 1/12th budget basis, or do it in chunks. Cities and towns, I think, are going to do the same thing. But it is, time for some very difficult decisions to be made, and we'll be making them sometime soon.
Well, Lenny, thanks for your time. Stay with us just for a second here, but thanks so much for joining us, and we appreciate all your information and insight on this issue.
Happy to do it. Thank you for having me on, Bill. Yeah.
Lenny Mira, the state representative from Essex County, but up in the Newbury, West Newbury area and so on, but we'll have those listed up on the post on our website.
All right, we're back now with Salem City Councilor Conrad Prosnewski, retired Salem Police Captain. And Conrad, welcome back to MSO. How are you?
Good, Rick. Thanks for having me back again.
Well, such weird times. I don't, obviously in my lifetime, I've never seen anything like this. And I know you're brand new to the Salem City Council, the biggest vote getter back in November, which seems like forever ago now. And I do want to get into that, but first, I have knowing you for so long as a Salem police officer back in my days at WESX with Al Needham, I just wonder what it's like for a police officer to have to go to a residence or an accident or someplace where you don't know what the situation is in terms of who you're dealing with. In other words, person could have some kind of a sickness, and you have to, you're the first guy there before before the rescue squad or the fire department, or you're dealing with something that is just kind of unknown. What's it like, Conrad, to have to do that? Because I know that you and so many other Salem police officers do that really on a regular basis.
Well, you know, Rick, in these times, we're in some water. There's anybody that's working for any police department that hasn't experienced anything like this at this time. I know that we've always responded to all the medical aids in the past, and we've always taken the precautions, you know, whether it was somebody that was, you know, seriously ill with, you know, with some kind of a disease. You know, we had some precautionary things in our bag to be able to take care of ourselves while we assisted fire or we assisted medical. But in these days now, this is a whole new ballgame, Rick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our guys have been given, I know at the police department, have been given, you know, the full suits, the gloves, everything that they need in case they have to go in there. But in all reality, they're not even responding immediately to some of the medical calls just because of what's been going on. They let the medical personnel go in first, and they'll stand by for assistance in case we're needed.
Oh, okay. All right. I didn't know that. That certainly makes sense. You know, what an awakening for you to end up Salem City Council during all of this, because it's been a nice, smooth ride, I'm sure, right?
Well, I'll tell you, yeah, talk about jumping out of the frying pan into the fire. That's kind of what it felt like. It's kind of a lot of the same issues, but in a different arena. You know, the whole thing is about quality of life for people and you know, representing the people. And you kind of do that as a police officer, you know, for years and years trying to help the people out in Salem. And finally, I managed to get elected and top the ticket.
What are some of the things that you guys are doing now? Because I know that you've gone to the remote meetings, I guess, and I'm just looking at the subcommittees, and the one that stands out that you're on, public health, safety, and environment. So from a city council point of view, what is happening? What's the agenda for you guys?
Well, as you probably know, and I think the public knows, all our meetings are now being held video conferencing. We've been using the Zoom platform, and it works all right. You know, there's plus and minuses business over our computers. You know, I think the plus side would be the fact that more people can join in. These more people can observe the council meetings, can participate more than the council chambers could hold. Public hearings or our council meetings inside the city chambers, you know, there's nothing like listening to somebody when they get up to the podium and speak, and you can see in their eyes and their face the passion and what they're presenting. That's something that you really don't get on the virtual platform that we've been using. So, and of course, there are some people that aren't even connected. They don't have the ability to do that. We are on SATV. They're live, but again, you're hearing their voice. You're not seeing their face and it's a little disconnect there.
Yeah.
So I think we're all hoping that this all gets back to normal so that we can continue business as we used to do before, because at least in my opinion, even though we're reaching a bigger audience on Zoom, I think having the ability to see people face-to-face is a big plus.
Well, I think it's going to be a long time before things get back to the way they were, if they ever do. Governor Baker today, I guess, shut down all the schools for the rest of the year, which seems to be fairly prudent, either anecdotally or otherwise. How are business people reacting to this? I talk with a Gloucester businessman, and it's really pretty devastating for a restaurant owner.
And you know, Rick, in Salem, a lot of a lot of people depend on the restaurant business. I think we have over 120 restaurants in the city of Salem. It's hit us hard. There's absolutely no doubt about that. You know, I hope people are trying to take advantage from the federal funding and state funding that they can, anything that they can get in to keep their heads above water. But this has been a very, very trying time. And your hearts go out to the people that lost their jobs. And then the people that kept their jobs, you have to take your hats off to them. They're working twice as hard to keep us going with what they've got. So, yeah, it is. This is tough times, no doubt.
What is there an agenda for the next city council meeting, or when is that scheduled to be, the next one?
Well, the next council meeting will be this Thursday at 7 p.m.
Okay.
And then it'll be on Zoom and on the SATV. about it yet. That actually comes out this afternoon. I am sure that the mayor will give us a briefing on what's been happening in Salem, COVID-wise and business-wise. I know that the city has got some really, really in charge of the many different aspects to help other people out. Besides the department heads that are working to maintain the city, there's an initiative called Salem Together, where there's over, almost 600 volunteers, and everybody that can help out is kind of put into a category under directions of other people. And people in Salem have really, really stepped up to the plate to help out. But again, you know, we're all pitching in to do this together, and you know, it's nice to see people reaching out and holding each other's hands and trying to get each other through this. But you know, God knows we've got to get through this and get through it soon.
Yeah. What kind of correspondence have you had, either by email or from phone calls from your constituents? Is there anything in particular that they've been asking about?
You know, we've been trying to keep people informed with the numbers, the city's Facebook page and website, and also I've been trying to copy and paste some of it on my own Facebook page, just to keep the people aware of what this, where the city is at and what the city is doing and what is available out there. The concerns that I'm hearing, just the devastating loss of jobs, Rick. I mean, you know, people are out of work, and this is tough. You know, I'm just praying that our economy gets rolling back as soon as possible.
Okay. Conrad Prosnewski, former police captain in the city of Salem, also a Salem City Councilor at large. Anything else you want to mention, Conrad?
You know, I don't think so, Rick. I think, I think it's incumbent upon all of us as human beings to reach out to one another to make sure that we're okay. And, you know, that we're seeing a lot of that happening. There's a lot of good stories, a lot of silver linings. You know, keep our head up. We're going to get through this. We are. And we're going to learn to be aware of your neighbor and be ready to help out when you can. That's all.
Well spoken. That's Salem City Councilor Conrad Prosnewski with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore. All right, we are back, and we're joined now with by Bill Newell and Josh Arnold. And just a quick headline here that Bill sent along to me, and maybe the guys can bat this around if they want to. But allegedly there'll be some protesters out in front of Governor Baker's home today. And, of course, his home is in Swampscott, his residence. And, the implication is that it will have to do with businesses not opening yet. And so I guess that is a topic of discussion. But we'll let the boys talk about that, and we'll bring on Bill Newell.
I saw that somewhere. It looks like it's kind of a statewide organization. I'm not sure that it's happening, but it was scheduled to happen sometime late this morning, and a group of people. So we'll see if that actually happens or not. The governor's house is usually protected by state police at some level, so they probably amped up a little bit just to be safe, but it's probably a fine protest. You know, I actually went on the state website, and we we've had numbers of links to the coronavirus data and so on, and I just happened to look at when Massachusetts peaked. So you can make a case that Massachusetts peaked April 12, and that's 10 days ago, basically. And that the issue here, though, is that the levels of cases hasn't gone down all that much. New case hasn't gone all the down that much. So there's, you could say there's a flattening of the curve. That's a very safe statistical statement to make, that that's happened over the 10-day period. However, it's not a drop like you might like to hope, and maybe that will be coming. Maybe that comes next week or whatever. But just a data point of interest here and of note, I think, to put some of this in context. And the governor was asked several questions at his news briefing, which is up on MSO News Sports yesterday, about reopening, and he's really not quite there yet. Understandably, I guess.
Well, I think that there's, I don't think that we're out of the woods yet, because there's as we talked about last time out, there are those locations that have not populated yet. And I think that people should wait and see when everybody goes to the Cape, the two Capes, and starts, the weather gets warmer and people start to move around a bit, whether that's going to create a backfill or a bounce in cases or and so forth.
Well, I'm not crazy about some of the closings. You know, on Cape Ann, Niles Beach is a very popular beach where people go and sit frequently in the evening in cars and just look out over the harbor, see the planes going in out of Logan Airport. And that's been closed. That's been barricaded off. They're barricading, I guess, Dogtown Common and Halibut Point up in Rockport. And, you know, the more you're barricaded in, the more you want to get out. And so I'm a little miffed that the places where people could go out and exercise and stay away from each other are being closed off.
Yeah, I think they're going to be looking at that again. I really do. I think that, for example, Lynshore Drive is one of those places which goes into Swampscott, which leads right up to the governor's house, if you will. And Swampscott it's all on the beach side. They all have the big orange barrels. So you can't park on the beach side of Lynshore Drive. So that there's no parking. However, you can still walk on the sidewalk. You know, having said that, by doing that, you do keep the traffic down and the transmission of the virus would thus be reduced. You can park on the other side of the road if there's parking there. But, you know, I do think that some of those things are going to have to probably will have to reopen, because you're right. Even the governor has said that, you know, getting out and taking a walk is good. So he's on that page. It's just a matter of, whether or not we can open up these parking areas. And that's something that maybe we'll get a little bit more information in another few days or weeks on that piece. I'm not saying I know that, but I mean, it only makes sense that if you're going to reopen something, like you said, Rick, that's one that kind of looks at and say, you know, why can't, you know, it is safe to walk on the beach. I mean, you have low tide or something like that. You could walk on the beach. I guess Florida, I'm rambling here a bit, but I guess Florida had a thing where you could walk the beach, but you can't just sit there and have a cooler or whatever, but whatever.
And different parts of Florida are less prone to the virus than others, for what they're saying. So there's no one size fits all here. Every city and town's going to be a little bit different. And I think that everybody's going to, you know, you err on the side of cautiousness. So while initially we may have been very strict, I think you'll see those things start to loosen up over time when there's a comfort margin with people. The last thing anyone wants to do is turn the faucet on and have it be a problem. And we elect people and they make those decisions. And it's like Twekla told me back in the day, you know, when to call them school off. You know, we always err on the side of caution. Make sure that it's safe for children. And I think that's what the elected folks are doing now.
I want to talk a little bit about connections, guys. We still have Steve Krause to talk with here in this program. And, Bill, it looks like we will have another Friday program coming up.
Yes, we will. And in fact, we'll be talking with State Rep Paul Tucker, who is in the State House working today in Boston. They have informal sessions, and only a handful of people are in at those. But he has gone in some, but he reports that he has been very busy with a lot of different constituent issues, as you might imagine. So that Paul Tucker will be one of our guests tomorrow on the program, and also Karen Carroll, Rick, from the Public Health Department.
Yeah, she's been kind enough to let us check in with her once a week. And we'll get an update from her. The numbers in Gloucester are okay, and I put those in quotes. And the hospital is still doing well, still has what it needs to take care of people. Also, we might be talking with, we plan to talk with George Carey, who owns two restaurants in Salem. We should be talking with him today, and we'll try to get that post up there tomorrow. And among other guests that we've got lined up, Bill, we've got you've got State Representative Lori Ehrlich. We've got B. Reardon, who is a mental health counselor in Gloucester. Joe Cardoza is a musician who hosts an open mic live night on Facebook. And we'll also be talking with, at some point, probably early next week, the Triton Superintendent of Schools, Brian Forget.
Yeah, we also later at some point next week, maybe, or the week following week, we'll talk with the Danvers superintendent. But actually, Representative Ehrlich will not be with us tomorrow. So,
oh, I just see it disappeared. Yeah, yeah. it just disappeared off my screen.
How that worked, Rick?
That's pretty cool.
You see it? Now you're on.
The magic.
Yeah, postponed, but
okay.
Anyways, we'll hope to have her on again at some point soon.
Wow, that's amazing, Bill. It's like wizardry. Josh, any final thoughts?
I should have been a little faster.
Just,
I guess.
Just hoping that everybody gets out to enjoy the good weather, but stays a good social distance. And I think that we're going to see good things happening as time ticks on. Hopefully, we'll have some better weather and a more consistent weather that's more characteristic of the month as opposed to what we have been.
All right, and I want to invite everyone to check out our website daily. We have all kinds of information going up there all the time. Bill is able to get the Charlie Baker press conferences up there every day in their totality, and it's just great information. So please let people know about us. You can email us, too, at msonewsports@gmail.com. And, of course, the website. You can find us at msonewsports.com or msonews.com or msosports.com to make it easy on yourself. Gentlemen, thank you very much. We'll talk with you guys, in a little while. Meantime, we're going to turn things over to Bill and Steve Krause here in just a second. This is Connections on MSO.
Connections continues. Bill Newell along with Rick Moore and Steve Krause, writer-at-large for the Daily Item of Lynn. Steve, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
How you doing, guys?
Hey, Steve.
We're doing fine. Hanging in there, I guess. Steve writes news, commentary as well. But, Steve, I thought maybe we could just talk a bit about, how you're seeing all of this from a newsman's perspective with the self-isolation, the quarantining and all of that, and the upending of our lives, I think, for the last several weeks here. What's your take on all this?
I don't, to be honest with you, I don't still quite know what to make of it. I just, it's been almost 2 months now since we were kind of thrust into this predicament here. And, I still feel totally surrealistic as far as I can see. Getting the news yesterday from Governor Baker that schools are closed for the year, all the other things that have just come screeching to a halt since March, and no sports. I think of all the high school kids who, were really relying on the last half of their senior years. Not treasure trove of memories. More important things like getting into schools and narrowing down the choices of schools. And, the entire social apparatus has just been jerked out of position. And, it's as if somebody went onto a soundboard or a wire grid and just indiscriminately pulled wires out from everywhere. And, we're left with when we can finally able to get to that soundboard or that grid and put it back together again, it's like, where do you start? So, a lot of uncertainty as to where it's all going, how we're going to get there, who do you believe, who do you listen to? I just think that the whole thing is very unsettling, and I don't know. That's about the best I can do. I'm sure that's not very encouraging to anybody who's listening, but that's my take on it.
Rick?
Well, Steve, I wonder what the your experience is around the community, because as we've been talking with people, you hear the same message every day. You hear the same message from public health people and so on. And then you see, or I see, what's on television around the country, and these people waving Confederate flags, and and protesting, let's get back online, you know, right now. But in my in the Cape Ann area, people are frustrated to be sure. Business owners are frustrated to be sure. But the uncertainty of this threat, I guess, of getting sick, I think has made most people do what they're supposed to do, and they're being patient. I just wonder what it's like, and because, you know, Lynn is densely populated, as is Lawrence.
I wouldn't know. I haven't left my house for the most part. You know, I've gone out to do some shopping, and, you know, I'm forever having to go to the drugstore because I'm on 101 different medications. But, you know, beyond all that, I haven't gone anywhere. I haven't done anything. You know, I sense that most people around here in this neck of the country really don't have much of a choice except to respect this thing, because we've been hit pretty hard by it in Massachusetts, and we're right next to New York, which was also hit pretty hard to it. And it's, you know, it's kind of, you know, been in our lives nonstop now for 2 months. And there are other parts of the country, though, where this hasn't been as big a problem as it's been here. And all they can do is look on the news and see something from 2,000 miles away that's wreaking havoc. But, you know, we're right here, right? I'd say we're right in the middle of it, you know. Right now, Massachusetts, it's as bad as it's probably ever going to get. And, you know, when you look at the numbers and everything, and I think it's very easy to take a look at this thing and say, well, yeah, we've got to be real careful. It's a little harder to do it when you're not in the epicenter of it. And you have, unfortunately, and I say not as a political thing, but just unfortunately in general, when you have people in position of power whispering in your ear that you don't have to do this stuff. You don't have to self-distance, you know. You don't have to, you know, it's more important to get the economy back going again. And, you know, I really, really, really feel for the people who have been affected by this. And by the way, one of them would be my wife. She lost her job, too. But, you know, I think you have to weigh one versus the other. And I don't know. I think I'd rather be alive to complain about it than be dead and not, and you know, not be experiencing any of it. So, again, you know, that's my opinion, and I don't think I'm that much out of the mainstream in it.
Yeah, there's I think people are struggling because it started quickly. It doesn't have an end, a definite end, like so many other things in our lives. Snow comes, it buries us. We know it's going to melt at some point for sure, and but this doesn't appear to have a hard end date for sure. And and I guess the other piece here is that there's still always that like the storms that roll through from you know, every few days. There's another storm on the horizon potentially with all of this virus talk, that it could come back in the fall, could come back in the winter. Who knows?
I'd like to say a little bit about that if I could, and That is that, you know, can we get through this one first before they start warning us about the next one? Sometimes, you know, I think that, you know, unfortunately, there are people in this world who love to do nothing else but deliver bad news to people. And I don't know what kind of a psychological mindset you have in order to be that type of person who just can't wait to get on the TV or the radio or whatever and just give bad news to people. You know, we're not even done with this one yet. You're telling us next one's going to be worse? You know, isn't it your job to make sure it's not worse? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm hoping there's a cure here fast, that they come up with something, and all of a sudden something crazy great happens, and come June 1st, we're wondering, hey, that wasn't so bad, we're back at it. But that's a dream, I guess.
Well, I don't know. I think you got to be somewhat realistic about these kinds of things.
Steve, you are beating me up big time here today.
No, I'm not beating you up. Come on now. I could never do that. I'm just...
Guys, you know... You know,
you know.
If the one of the hard... For me, guys, one of the most difficult things is that we really don't have the entertainment distraction. Like in 9/11, we still had sports. During storms, you know, locally, we can look to the rest of the country to see something else that's going on. The entertainment industry is tied up right now. If you look at some of what's on, we watch Jeopardy every night, and you know the audiences aren't there anymore. They can't do it. They're doing the social distancing. So we don't have that distraction either. So people are I think the cabin fever is worse than I've ever seen it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think that's got a big deal. Although I did watch Game 7 of the 2011 Stanley Cup Finals last night, and it was just as good last night as it was in 2011.
Okay.
Certainly went a long way.
Yeah, I've heard people talk about that. Well, Steve, we're probably just about out of time here, but anything else to share with us? How are things with the newspaper?
That's another very difficult thing, Bill. It's, you know, there's, you know, I couldn't help but notice that the news, you know, when all those north of Boston papers are only publishing, you know, Mondays and then Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays, and they're not publishing Tuesdays and Saturdays. And you know that's because there's no ad revenue. Nobody's buying any ads because nothing's open. And, you know, they've had to make do, and I have no idea. I hope that's not what's in store for us, you know, but I can certainly understand why that is. It's just, it's a big issue everywhere, and we seem to be doing okay. I will have to say that I think that our paper has stepped up really well in reporting about this. I mean, I think that the stories in our paper have been very good. You know, we've kind of covered COVID from about every angle you could possibly cover it, and we've done it repeatedly. You know, and I don't want, there's plenty of things to write about, and the things that you write about, you can easily go back and write about them again after a 2 or 3 week period, because they don't change, and there's always something about them to write. But I will also be happy when we're writing about city council meetings and mundane matters of municipal politics too. I don't know how much more of this anybody can stand, really. It's just and then everybody knows somebody who's either had this or, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's been a glancing blow or the worst, but, you know, this isn't just a drumbeat, it's the whole drum line, I guess is the best way I can put it.
Yeah. Well, you're right, Steve. The paper's done a lot of great stories on this, a lot of very important information for the community. So, Steve, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to join us, and be safe, and stay inside and isolate.
I'm not having any trouble isolating. It's not isolating.
Yeah.
I really, you know, you really want to go out, and you get tired of putting a mask on and gloves, and I mean, crying out loud, you walk out of the house to go to the drugstore, you look like a beekeeper. You know, it gets old.
Without the sweet honey. All right, there he is, Steve Krause, with us here, for Writer at Large, Daily Item of Lynn here on Connections.
Oh, my goodness, that is it for Connections. A rather full plate, as always. Thank you, Bill, and thank you, Steve, and thank you to all of our guests, and thank you to for listening and checking in with us here. Again, we want to appeal to Manchester by the Sea Town Administrator, State Representative Lenny Mirror. Appreciate his talking with Bill. I want to thank Salem City Councilor at Large Conrad checking in with us, and of course, too, that takes care of this edition. Please check in tomorrow. We'll be back probably a little bit before 10 o'clock with a whole bunch of guests tomorrow and much more stuff coming up here. I love that word, stuff, during the week and probably on the weekend as well. So you know the drill. Thank you. On behalf of Josh Arnold, Bill Newell, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, stay safe and do the right thing.